ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, I know you're here for Matt Bevan. First, though, I'm Dominique Bayens, host of Expanse, the NANUP 4. In 2007, a charismatic Englishman who ran a doomsday cult from his living room in remote WA vanished with his partner, their child, and a friend.
He's a very odd guy.
Beat them all.
This season, I dive into a murky world of cults, control, and secret identities. Search Expanse on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. A lot of people have been pointing out the difference between this version of Donald Trump from 2011 during the Obama administration.
Our president will start a war with Iran because he has absolutely no ability to negotiate because he thinks that's the only way he can get elected. Isn't it pathetic?
And this version of Donald Trump from 2026 during the second Trump administration.
We have hit hundreds of targets in Iran, including Revolutionary Guard facilities, Iranian air defense systems.
The version that just announced the killing of Iran's supreme leader in a US-backed airstrike.
Ayatollah Khamenei is dead.
The version that has carried out unprovoked military operations all over the world.
The US has launched military strikes on Iran, Yemen, Nigeria, and Syria. American forces snatched Venezuela's president in an overnight raid.
This is the same guy who only 18 months ago was promising to end American involvement in foreign wars.
They've taken away your money and sent our blood and treasure to fight stupid foreign wars in countries that you've never heard of. This Tuesday is your chance to stand up and declare that you're not going to take it anymore.
Now, the response to this attack on Iran has been, well, mixed. Some are accusing Trump of betraying his campaign promises or lying to get elected.
This is not what we voted for, Megan. He's lying. He's gone back on what he promised. No more foreign wars, no more regime change.
Others are congratulating his decision to take out the top levels of Iran's regime.
President Trump puts America and Americans first. He doesn't hesitate, and neither do our troops.
And anti-war commentators from across the political spectrum are calling him all kinds of names.
This is pure insanity. Does anyone think America will be stronger after this war? Of course not. America will be weaker.
Your tax dollars are being used to bomb Iran, while Donald Trump ignores the struggles of working people who can't afford health care.
But I think the most interesting question is, why did he do this?
This is an incredibly risky move for a president who pledged to stop wars, not start them.
Why did someone who has, for more than a decade, decried any suggestion of conflict with Iran, sent the US military to try and topple a large, sophisticated, and highly entrenched regime? Over the next few episodes, we're going to be taking a deep dive into Iran. It's a very complicated country in an even more complicated region, and there's a lot to say about it. So we'll take a close look at the regime Trump is trying to get rid of, its history, its problems, and what might happen to it next. But first, we're looking at Iran's relationship with the US and how Trump convinced himself that dropping bombs onto a country to topple its regime doesn't count as a stupid foreign war. I'm Matt Bevan, and this is If You're Listening. Okay, we're going to start with a bit of a geography lesson.
It is only 24 miles wide. Few people even know where it is. Yet the Strait of Hormuz at the opening of the Persian Gulf is essential to the energy needs of the West and Japan.
The Strait of Hormuz is a very strange place. A narrow body of water with enormous jagged mountains rising up on both sides. The surrounding landscape is hot and inhospitable, and nobody would pay much attention to it, if not for the fact that a sizable proportion of the world's oil and gas sails through it.
Tankers carry oil from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates, as well as Iran and Iraq.
Before being deposed, the Shah of Iran saw keeping the strait open for trade as vital to his country's survival. He spent enormous resources building a massive navy to guarantee the security of tankers travelling through the strait. But all of that changed in 1979 when he was overthrown in the Islamic Revolution and the strait fell into chaos.
Once patrolled by the Shah's powerful fleet, the Hormuz Straits are the jugular vein of the world's industrialized nations.
The new Iranian regime saw the strait as leverage. If threatened, they could block trade from travelling through it.
If the straits were blocked, even temporarily, the industrialized world could grind to a halt.
Whenever the regime is in trouble, they remind everyone of their trump card.
The revolutionary government in Tehran claims it will close the strait by force if its oil industry is attacked by Iraq.
Every time this happens, the US sends battleships into the region to protect the tankers and keep the strait open.
Can you imagine the precedent that would be set if we all stepped back and said, well, this barbaric country has a right to close down these international waters?
Generally, the Americans keep their threats kind of vague and, frankly, a little creepy.
I think it's far better if the Iranians go to bed every night wondering what we might do.
For 47 years, the Iranians kind of kept wondering. They've made threats of a blockade of the strait about once every decade since the revolution.
Today, closing the Straits of Hormuz for Iran's armed forces is really easy. Or as the Iranians say, it will be easier than drinking a glass of water.
But despite those threats, it's never been completely closed to shipping before. One of the times those threats ramped up was in 2019, during Donald Trump's first term as president.
Tensions in the Middle East have increased dramatically after attacks overnight on two oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman.
These unprovoked attacks present a clear threat to international peace and security and an unacceptable campaign of escalating tension by Iran.
But exactly what Trump was going to do about it was unclear.
Donald Trump has so far said he doesn't want conflict with Iran. Let's put him at odds with some in his administration, like National Security Advisor John Bolton.
John Bolton.
Thank you very much.
John Bolton had been a top official in the George W. Bush administration, and up until he was appointed as Donald Trump's National Security Advisor, he'd been on the speaking circuit, pushing for the US to invade Iran.
The declared policy of the United States of America should be the overthrow of the Mullah's regime in Tehran.
Bolton predicted in a speech that the regime of Ayatollah Khamenei would be gone by 2019.
And that's why before 2019, we here will celebrate in Tehran. Thank you very much.
And then in 2019, with Iran attacking oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz, Bolton was in a position to finally make that prediction come true. But it wasn't going to be easy getting Donald Trump to agree to it.
Obviously, the war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake. They lied.
Okay.
They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew there were none. We should have never been in Iraq. We have destabilized the Middle East.
Trump had run for office in 2016 by promising to put America first and stay out of endless foreign wars.
For years, we have been caught up in endless wars and conflicts under the leadership of failed politicians and a failed, totally failed foreign policy.
Now, as Iran seemingly threatened the global oil supply in retaliation for increased US economic sanctions, Trump didn't seem to be in the mood to escalate.
Do I want war? I don't want war with anybody. I'm somebody that would like not to have war.
Over the course of a few months, things began heating up. Multiple ships were harassed and hit by sea mines. Saudi oil facilities were hit by missiles.
Iran's parliamentarians chant, "Death to America." And the US continues to show it's ready for war.
The climactic point happened when an American drone was shot out of the air by Iranian forces. John Bolton and a number of other top advisors wanted the president to do something about it.
All of his advisors, all of them, recommended retaliating for the strike against the American drone and Iran's earlier conduct in the Gulf, attacking shipping.
Trump wasn't entirely sure about his next move, so he asked his advisors a question.
They said, "Sir, we're ready to go. We'd like a decision." I said, "I want to know something before you go. How many people will be killed? In this case, Iranians." Came back, said, "Sir, approximately 150.
And I thought about it for a second. I said, you know what? They shot down an unmanned drone. Here we are sitting with 150 dead people, and I didn't like it. I didn't think it was proportionate.
The answer made Trump second guess himself. Bolton later wrote in his book that he was disturbed, not with the decision itself, but with the way Trump made it.
The process that had been followed to reach that decision was kind of textbook Washington, how you make a serious decision in the national security area. And his decision not to follow through was based on an anecdote at the last minute without any others being consulted.
Bolton said making decisions like this on a whim could lead to more serious problems.
The question is how decisions are best made in the national interest of the United States, not simply by Trump's gut reaction.
But Trump's takeaway was he trusted his gut reaction. The strait opened, shipping traffic resumed, nobody died. The US avoided an endless war. That was the Trump doctrine. No endless wars. No flag-draped coffins. Conflicts start and stop when he says they do. Now, John Bolton hated this idea, so much so that he decided to leave, but not before he secured one final promise from Trump. This time, Iran's attack was on an unmanned drone. But if Iran killed an American, Bolton wanted to make sure there would be consequences.
Five current and former administration officials tell NBC the president gave the go-ahead to kill Soleimani if Iran's aggression led to the death of any American, provided the president got final sign-off first.
Soleimani is Qasem Soleimani, a senior commander in Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, who was considered the second most powerful man in Iran after the supreme leader. We didn't have to wait long to see how those consequences would play out, because a few months later, an American defense contractor was killed in a rocket attack on an Iraqi military base. So, true to his word, Trump signed off on the strike on Soleimani.
The burning wreckage in the distance is all that's left of two vehicles at Baghdad's international airport. The target was Iran's most powerful military commander, Qasem Soleimani.
He was a monster. And he's no longer a monster. He's dead.
The Iranian regime was, as expected, rather upset.
Iranian officials say the killing of the general is a declaration of war.
A few days later, two American military bases in Iraq were under attack.
They promised revenge, and it arrived in a barrage of missiles.
But the barrage of missiles was, not particularly devastating.
We suffered no casualties. All of our soldiers are safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases. Iran appears to be standing down, which is a good thing for all parties concerned and a very good thing for the world.
At the time, Iran was backing a vast network of terrorist groups, the Houthis, Hamas, and Hezbollah, and claimed to have significant cyber war capabilities. Surely one of those groups would retaliate and make Trump pay. Well, they definitely tried. We now know that the Revolutionary Guards attempted several times to hire people to assassinate Trump, John Bolton, a US ambassador, and then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. But none of those attacks came to pass because they were all foiled at the planning stage. So what did Trump learn from this? He ordered the killing of the second most powerful man in Iran, and the ramifications were virtually nothing. No quagmire, no American boots on the ground, no flag-draped coffins. These aren't endless wars in his book. They start when he wants them to, they end when he wants them to. In fact, every conflict he waded into in his first term, from his perspective, seemed to turn out fine. North Korea turned out fine. Syria? Well, we'll call that a draw. And Yemen, where even is that? So let's shuttle through to Trump's second term.
On approach to the targets of Fordo, Natanz and Isfahan, the bombers link up with fighter jet escorts. Then it begins.
US President Donald Trump says America has struck Iranian nuclear facilities.
The heavily fortified Fordo facility is hit first at 2:10 a.m. local time. The entire engagement over in 25 minutes.
The US bombing of Iranian nuclear enrichment facilities in June 2025 followed more than a week of missile and drone attacks between Israel and Iran.
The US and Israel believe they have Iran's regime on the run.
Iran appeared on the back foot, with many of its allies severely weakened or eliminated entirely by Israeli attacks.
Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah dead, the Assad regime in Syria toppled, Hamas degraded in Gaza, and signs Israel is set on nothing less than regime change in Tehran.
Israel had taken out dozens of Iranian leaders and their allies, and every time, Iran vowed revenge.
We consider martyrdom a great blessing, but right now we are fighting for victory.
You hit us, we'll hit you back, again and again, until you understand. This is Iran, the land of lions.
But every time, the revenge was fairly limited. Israeli casualties in the dozens, not the hundreds. And American casualties were virtually non-existent.
The US says none of its personnel were killed or injured.
President Trump now has to decide whether the US escalates its attacks, turning this into another prolonged war in the Middle East, which would be a broken promise to keep the US out of so-called forever wars.
Trump had learned a lesson through the killing of Soleimani, that wars with Iran could be ended when he wanted. So once again, Trump decided to end the cycle of escalation.
Donald Trump let the world know he considered the matter done.
He posted online that Iran and Israel had agreed to a ceasefire.
I think the president really hit the reset button and said, look, let's actually produce long-term peace for the region. That's always been his goal.
Trump got in, met his objectives, and he got out and declared the game was over. Bippity-boppity-boo. But Iran and Israel were still kind of at bippity.
Just hours into the US president's imposed ceasefire, air raid sirens ring out.
They weren't done just yet.
On Israeli military claims it had detected an Iranian missile bound for the north. Orders for the IDF to respond forcefully quickly follow.
So Trump got involved in something, he declared it over, and yet it kept going. He decided to deal with it like the highly skilled negotiator and statesman he is by hitting the caps lock key.
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I've never seen before. We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do you understand that?
After a number of very angry social media posts from Trump, Iran and Israel stopped fighting.
They're not going to be fighting each other. They've had it. They've had a big fight, like two kids in a schoolyard. You know, they fight like hell. You can't stop them. Let them fight for about 2-3 minutes. Then it's easier to stop them.
And then daddy has to sometimes use strong language.
You have to use strong language. Every once in a while, you have to use a certain word.
The guy referring to Trump as daddy is the head of NATO, who had been sending the president a series of fawning text messages.
Dear Donald, congratulations. Thank you for your decisive action in Iran. That was truly extraordinary.
So, to recap, over the course of Trump's time in office so far, he seems to have discovered an on-off switch for war. War on, war off. It works like this. Trump turns the war switch on. There are a lot of explosions. Trump's very short-term goals are achieved. Trump decides he's had enough, and Trump turns the war switch off. He then gets weird praise from a Dutch guy. He figured out the US military could be deployed to devastating effect, seemingly with very little political cost.
He did not say there would be no more wars. He said there would be no more forever wars.
And these wars, the ones he started, all ended exactly when he told them to. It worked with Soleimani, it worked with the 12-day war, and it worked in January with Venezuela. Let's see how that went. Turn the war switch on.
The dramatic overnight operation in Venezuela's capital, raining down fire on the city in the early hours of the morning.
The US military flew in, snatched the Venezuelan president out of his bed, and flew out. War switch is off. Job is done.
This was one of the most stunning, effective, and powerful displays of American military might and competence.
A big macho show of military force with very few political ramifications for Trump at all. Iran was, for him, the logical next step.
We are going to destroy their missiles and we are going to annihilate their navy.
Trump decided to turn on the war switch. And within hours, the top levels of the Iranian leadership had been decimated.
Iran's formerly supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, is dead.
He made it clear that the intention was to destroy the Ayatollah's regime.
I call upon all Iranian patriots who yearn for freedom to seize this moment, to be brave, be bold, be heroic, and take back your country.
Unlike in their wars waged in Iraq and Afghanistan, the US would not be playing any role in building any new Iranian democracy.
America is with you. I made a promise to you, and I fulfilled that promise. The rest will be up to you, but we'll be there to help.
Trump expects this operation to take about a month, 4 to 5 weeks to be precise, and then he's out. Give us a call if you need anything.
We didn't start this war, but under President Trump, we are finishing it.
The question is, will there be a cost for him this time? Well, remember that jagged-edged body of water we started with?
It is only 24 miles wide. Few people even know where it is.
There was a reason I mentioned the Strait of Hormuz earlier. It's been the loaded gun sitting on the table the whole time. Chekhov's Strait.
An oil tanker burns in the Strait of Hormuz as Iran lashes out.
It's closing down oil shipping in the Strait of Hormuz.
Iran has closed the strait. It actually doesn't take much. You only need to make going through it unsafe enough that insurance companies won't insure the oil and gas tankers going through.
If we get, you know, $10, $20, $30 increase in the price of oil, yeah, petrol prices could potentially go up by 30 cents a litre.
And suddenly a war on the other side of the world can start to have an effect on everyone.
So definitely on my mind because I drive a lot.
It's going to like completely throw a spanner in the mix. Like honestly, inflation, it's getting crazy out here.
We talked in our recent Black Swan series about how big, sustained energy price shocks can have massive ramifications for the global economy. If the strait is closed for a few weeks, the global impact may be minimal. If those weeks turn to months, we're all going to start to notice a big shift. The US is trying hard to open the strait, tasking its navy with escorting tankers and bombing Iranian naval facilities on the strait's rocky shores. One of those naval facilities was walking distance away from a girls' school. The school was hit by American or Israeli missiles, leading to the deaths of more than 150 schoolgirls. 2019 Trump balked at the idea of 150 military casualties in a retaliation strike. Now, funerals have been held for at least that many dead schoolchildren in the city of Minab. Their small coffins are draped in Iranian flags. Flag-draped coffins, just not the ones Trump was worried about. It's worth saying that virtually every world leader who started a war in the last two centuries, from the Kaiser to Bush to Putin, thought it would be quick, contained, and have no unforeseen consequences. Trump thinks he's smarter than those guys. We'll see if he's right. If You're Listening is written by me, Matt Bevan. Supervising producer is Kara Jensen-McKinnon. It's produced by Adair Shepherd and Pat Sunderland. Next Thursday, we'll be looking at the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the sprawling, complex, fiercely loyal military behemoth charged with defending the Iranian regime. With that regime under more threat than ever before, is the Revolutionary Guard capable of keeping it in power? We're also planning to answer more of your questions about the war in the next few weeks, so keep sending them through. Send a voice note file to ifyourlistening@abc.net.au. I'll catch you next week.